Title of my talk, I would like to heavily emphasize the second word there, the potential. I'm going to commit a major fallacy of those of us that study the adaptationist paradigm, and that is to tell a nicely woven evolutionary story with scant anecdotal evidence. So, but I think that it does have excellent potential for understanding social interactions and social networking and those topics that we're covering here today. And that is one of the important decisions that a honeybee colony has to make during its life history. And what I'll be concentrating on is this period of colony reproduction, usually associated with swarming. And as Stan just very eloquently pointed out, that process is very heavily involved with social interactions. And as Tom Seeley and his colleagues have shown, that it's also a wonderful system in which to study cooperative decision making. And Stephen Pratt, I'm sure, will be talking about that later on in different social insect systems. And so this system is very good at elucidating some of these very themes. The end process of, or the end result of this process of colony reproduction is that the replacement or daughter queen within the honeybee colony then engages in mating behavior. She flies from the nest to mate with multiple drones. And this process is also very heavily involved in decision making, and in this case pretty much the queen's own decision making about how and when the mating process takes place and when she decides to cease mating and begin oviposition, because that tends to be an on-off switch where queens will never mate again in their life. But it also has connotations for social interactions that is really relatively little understood, where the workers may actually be involved in the queen's decision making. There may be some social interactions involved during these mating flights that the queens take, and that would be a really excellent thesis in the future. But what I'm going to be, just to back up one bit, the ramifications of queens mating multiple times, where they mate with an average of about 12 drones, but that number, as you can see, spans quite dramatically. But I think, as most of us know, that the effect that polyandry like this has on the internal genetic architecture of a colony can be quite profound, and the differences in genetic relatedness and these skews in genetic relatedness, at least within social hymenopteran colonies, can have effects on interactions and social networks. So I won't really go into that, but honeybees, because their queens are so highly polyandrous, it can certainly affect this. But what I'd like to concentrate on today is what happens in the middle. What happens in the middle between when the mother queen departs with the prime swarm and after the final successive daughter queen goes out and mate. What happens in between maybe also has this potential for understanding collective decisions, and certainly involves very intense and quite remarkable suite of nestmate interactions. And this process of queen production, where daughter queens are raised and then a single successor queen is then chosen, or at least potentially chosen. And so that process can be broken down then into two stages that I'll talk about here today. The first is queen rearing, where dozens of daughter queens are raised by the workers, oftentimes after the mother queen has already departed, so she has left the scene, and these daughter queens are then developing in these special royal cells that hang vertically downward here in this picture. And then the second phase is queen elimination, where these dozens of daughter queens then actually have to fight out to the death until there's a single successor queen that inherits the nest. And so I'll talk about the potential for decision making in each of these phases of queen production. So during queen rearing, the potential decision-making and nestmate interactions that most researchers have concentrated during queen rearing is the potential for nepotism. So again, because queens mate multiple times, there are multiple subfamilies within colonies, and so it's very intriguing to see if certain workers prefer to raise their super sisters or their full sisters over their half sisters, exhibiting nepotism during this queen rearing process. And without boring you with the litany of different studies that have tried to find evidence of nepotism during queen rearing, I will just suffice it to say that there has been little, if any, and I would probably argue none, no evidence at all that net nepotism is really occurring here. But that isn't to say that there isn't a potential for group choice or collective decision making over who gets raised as a queen. And in fact, if you take a queen out of a colony, the workers will raise queens from worker larvae. Since female larvae are bipotent, they can develop either into workers or queens, depending on how they're fed during the larval stage. And the workers will raise those female larvae as queens. But there's a interesting effect that the older the worker larva is at the time that it is initially fed royal jelly and raised as a queen, the older that larva is, the lower her quality as a queen. So she will still develop and emerge as a queen, but the various characteristics of her reproductive quality or reproductive potential, such as her body size and her reproductive organs, most specifically her ovaries, they're more worker-like. So that the older the larva, the more worker-like the queen is, therefore she has a correspondingly lower quality. And if one can experimentally manipulate that, you can show this dramatic and very significant decrease in queen quality the older that the larva is when it's initially raised as a queen. And if you allow workers, and if you allow a colony to raise queens on their own, you will see that they're actually not all that discriminating as to the age at which those queens, the brood of those queens, are raised. So here are some bar graphs of the age cohorts of queens as they're raised by colonies, by the queenless workers. Eggs that are 1, 2, or 3 day old, and then larvae that are 1 or 2 days old. And you can see that there's a wide variation in the age of these individuals that they choose to make their new queens from. Even though the queens that develop from these older larvae are going to be of lower reproductive quality. And what's really interesting here is that if you notice that these white portions of these bars are actually queen cells that the workers construct, and in fact the queens reach the pupal stage and the cell is capped over with wax, so they're no longer in the larval stage and no longer provisioning them royal jelly. They tear those queen cells down. Over half of the queen cells that the workers construct, they subsequently tear down, which is quite curious. And if you notice very closely that the proportion of the white bar compared to the black bar, which are actually the number of queens that emerge, the proportion is much higher in those older cohorts of larvae that are raised versus the younger cohorts. In other words, they tend to tear down more of these potentially lower quality queens than they do of these queens that are going to be of higher quality. And in fact, if you take those queens that emerge from those cells, even though there's this expectation of a drop-off in queen qualities the older the larvae get, they all seem to be very consistent. Statistically, they're all equivalent, such that all the queens that eventually emerge, even though there's this age effect of queen quality, all of those that eventually emerge are in fact of similar reproductive potential. So what this suggests, and this is where my evolutionary arm waving begins, and that is that it's very possible then that the workers are weeding out these lower quality queens before they even get a chance to emerge, that somehow they're sensing the potential reproductive quality of these queens and then destroying those queen cells before they ever get a chance, such that those that emerge are all going to be, you know, above par. So again, collective decision making, or at least the potential for it, that something I've been wanting to test for a long time but just haven't yet. But where the social interaction really comes into play, and this is that second phase of queen production, this queen elimination phase, where the queens actually duke it out to the death and kill each other off. And here is where the worker-queen interactions and queen-queen interactions are very, very intense and also are very intriguing for the potential for collective decision-making. And so, as I was saying before, as multiple or dozens of queens are raised after the mother queen has departed in the swarm, that number of that temporary state of polygyny needs to be reduced back down to a single queen, because of course honeybee colonies are monogynous. And a review of the literature by Dave Gilley in 2004 suggests that there seems to be two syndromes at work here during this queen elimination phase. And the way that it breaks down is that the one syndrome is if the colony is not sufficiently strong to issue secondary swarms headed by virgin queens, so that the colony overall does not have additional reproductive potential, then the first queen that develops and emerges from her cell goes around and kills all of the other queens while still in their cells, and she takes over the nest and does so very, very quickly, and the workers seem to not really care at all. The second syndrome, however, is if the colony is sufficiently strong, that it's large enough to issue multiple swarms after the first swarm has left with the mother queen. In this case, there are intense interactions within and among the workers and the queens, and this potential decision-making process is very much prolonged. And there is regulation and imprisonment of queens within cells. There is communication among queens through this signal called piping, where the queens are actually making audible signals to each other and responding to each other. And there's a very rich behavioral suite of interactions that are going on here. I have this short video clip, and I too have had some difficulties with this, so if this doesn't work out, you'll just have to believe me. Oh dear, not a good sign. Ooh, maybe. Oh, that's about as clear as mud. Great. Well, that dot moving around right there is a queen, and she's going to. Oh, you see that the workers interacting with her very negatively and biting and chasing her. Well, if that were all visible, you would be able to believe me intently and just believe every word I say. So, but hopefully some of you might have been able to make out that the workers are chasing and biting and are very much interacting negatively with the queen, but importantly, they never kill the queen. It may seem like a very hostile and negative behavior towards the queen, but they never actually kill these virgin queens during these battles, this queen elimination phase, which is very curious, and it kind of begs the question, well, why are they doing that? What is the potential for that? And again, the potential here is that it may be involved in some sort of collective decision making. There are other, here's a really amazing interaction. I wish I had some video of it, but I don't. And this is a very strange and unique behavior in these honeybee battles of spraying behavior, which is just a fancy way of saying that the queens are flinging feces at each other. And what happens is that they spray their hind gut contents at each other. And in the literature, you'll see that this has a repellent effect on the workers. But if you look at this in observation hives, it has just the exact opposite and very profound effect, where the workers are so highly attracted to this fecal material that they're spraying at each other that they condense and collapse in that area and have this huge press of bees where nobody can move. And what happens is that this is actually used as a fighting tactic by these virgin queens, so that if one gets hit and the other does not, the one that gets hit with this fecal matter is imprisoned and immobilized so that her rival can then sting the sitting duck. And so it's a really wonderful use of a fighting tactic by using the social interactions and using the workers to pin down their rivals. There's also been investigations of these chasing and biting interactions among queens of various relatedness. And to summarize this slide, work done by Dave Gilley again, shows that there really isn't any differential interaction among queens of various relatedness, either a super sister or a half sister. And then experimental manipulations of queen quality, again, their potential for their reproductive potential, there doesn't seem to be any difference in the workers interacting with these queens. However, this is all very cursory, and I think there's a lot more room to explore here of exactly why the workers are interacting so intensely with these queens. And so to conclude, this potential for collective decision making may be at the queen rearing level, that the queens are being weeded out, or the lower quality queens are being weeded out before they even get a chance to complete their development. These intense worker queen interactions may potentially bias the outcome of these competitive bouts, but a lot more work needs to be done. And that final queen replacement, that final queen that winds up replacing the departed mother queen, may in fact be a process of collective decision making. Here are some quotes by people like Charles Darwin that hopefully would have convinced you utterly that I am right, but I'll just have to forego that and thank my collaborators over the years on some of this work and the funding sources. Thank you very much. Sean.
So Dave, I'm kind of getting back to the early stage elimination process. You had these various measures that went into estimating queen quality. Have you done kind of a sub-analysis and tried to tease apart which of those factors are really important in explaining the pattern?
Yeah, the question was, what of that kind of multidimensional space that I'm defining as queen quality, what are the real important factors there? Really, of those principal component analyses, the two most important ones are ovarial number or ovary weight, depending on the study, and queen size, which are obviously intercorrelated themselves. So it is the reproductive kind of potential, but other factors are involved too.